On today's College Football Inquirer, one of the biggest investments in the offseason transfer portal is off to get treatment for a gambling addiction and may not be playing this season. What is going on with Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby? Also, 5 to play 5. The march continues through the NCAA rules process, and the numbers for the draft are in. We break them down all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and gentlemen, that was a bomb that hit Monday. Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby, who either the number two or number three biggest investment in the history of the transfer portal, is headed to treatment for a reported gambling addiction, and the NCAA is investigating whether he gambled on Indiana games when he was on Indiana's team, and there's a chance that he may not play this year. And that is a multi-layered situation, because Texas Tech is your returning favorite in the Big Ten and in the Big 12, returning champ, and they spent a ton of money because they needed a better quarterback because they got shut out in the Orange Bowl by Oregon. Brendan Sorsby, one of the highest profile transfers of the year, a quarterback with a NFL future. Guys, there's so much to unpack here.
A lot, yeah. There's so many angles to this, and one of them I didn't even think about until this morning when I woke up to a text from somebody that was like, hey, in the pro sports drafts, you do a bunch of background checks and dig into all your draft picks. Mm-hmm. And that's not really done in college as much. And
yes,
boy, it should be done now.
Yes, and that's something we were talking about a lot internally at On3 yesterday, because like one of the first things we all did was call the NFL scouts we knew to say, hey, did you look into Brendan Sorsby? Did this ever come up? And basically what we found out is they had obviously evaluated him, but it was pretty clear he was going to come back to college, whether that was at Cincinnati or somewhere else. And so they didn't do the big deep dive that they do when they know you're going into the draft. And like, I've seen it. Have you guys covered the Senior Bowl before?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, when the players go into the meetings with the scouts, or sometimes the scouts will even talk to the players on the field after practice, and like, they will start asking the players questions, and you will see the look on the player's face as they're asking somewhat uncomfortable questions. Like, how did you know that? And they get it all.
The NFL employs the highest level of American investigators. So I grew up in a law enforcement family, federal law enforcement, and a lot of retired Leos at the federal level will go to work for the NFL or go to work for agencies that work with the NFL or go to work for agents themselves. And it's specifically to scrape the entire background of an individual. It's funny, as I talked to someone who was working in the NFL a year or two ago, and you know what the one blind spot was, ironically? They weren't going through and scraping individual social media posts. What they are looking for is more of the behavioral. Yeah. So now there are boutique firms that exist, and all they do is kind of just like, not diagnose, but just sort of take apart your entire life. Colleges don't have those.
But clearly, they do when they're recruiting a high school kid, but not
yes
when
no.
they're. Yeah, right. There are blind spots there, but there's a significant higher investment and attempt to figure out how this person ticks when you're recruiting them out of high school. When you are in the portal, even for somebody who was who was tampered with, and I'm not making any accusations here, but let's just assume that most high profile transfers were tampered with by a few weeks or a month or so.
Yeah.
There's still not enough time to figure everything out. And this is one of those that if you're Texas Tech, when this drops on your desk that this is a possibility, the sinking feeling has to be absolutely brutal.
Yeah, but there's an issue here. this is really the first of its kind at this large of a scale in terms of the individual being paid and the amount of attention that this is receiving. There's a report from USA Today out this morning that Cincinnati had awareness that this was going on while he was before the 2025 season started. Now, my credulousness can only go so far. I'm willing to wager that Texas Tech had some sort of awareness that this was at least a hobby and probably didn't understand the magnitude of it. It didn't hit the normal red flags like, hey, this person gets in trouble with the law. This person speeds. Well, this person has domestic violence issues.
People who work with college athletes understand probably better than the general public does. College athletes, because they're college students, are gambling. They do.
It is
college
an epidemic right
across
now.
The country gamble a lot now.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to gamble.
It is an epidemic. Alcohol and drug consumption recreationally are down tremendously by generation, by decade, by any other kind of data point you want to conceive of. It's basically empirical at this point because the amount of study that's gone into it. There are a lot of reasons for that. But if you're looking for sort of an increase in vice or an increase in something you should be alarmed about, especially and almost exclusively amongst young men, gambling has now skyrocketed in terms of treatment being sought for males under the age of 30, males under the age of 24. I was just at a college campus a week or two ago for a speaking engagement, and they were talking about how it is simply a way of life to get up, maybe in the way some of us in the late 90s or early aughts would get up on our way to class and burn a cigarette. Individuals now are placing small bets on stuff that you wouldn't believe in terms of the infinitesimal nature of this on their way to class. Some people are doing this hundreds of times a day.
Some reports on Sorsby were balls and strikes at Reds games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is very common. In like a dollar or even less than a dollar, which I didn't even know you could bet less than a dollar.
Yes. This is very common because the other thing I would want, if you have no familiarity with gambling as it exists in the modern day, I would liken it to this. Tobacco companies handed cigarettes to pilots in World War II. It was a way of getting an entire generation addicted when they came back home. But those cigarettes were pretty pure. They were basically tobacco, right? It took about 40 years for the tobacco industry to refine the addictiveness of their product, so much so that they eventually were shut down by the United States government, more or less, right? They can't advertise. The sales to minors were banned. They went through a massive amount of litigation. The style and the product of gambling that is aimed directly at young people and young males specifically is 100,000% more potent than going on a bachelor trip to Vegas and putting $20 down on a Hawks game. I did that. First time I ever gambled, I was in Vegas. I put $20 down on a Hawks game. I didn't know what I was doing. I think I made $50 and then that was kind of it. The first time I gambled on sports. The way that this is constructed on phone apps, I need people to understand Brendan Sorsby's not alone amongst college students or amongst college athletes. And you're going to see more of this. And this is also where I would bridge into saying that we in the media are more than a little bit responsible because the advertising.
I host a show, my other show. We are sponsored by a sports book. Our presenting sponsor is a sports book. And it's everywhere. You know, the NBA has an official sports book. ESPN has its own sports, they don't have their own anymore, but they have an official sports book partner. And you look at the fields. There are casino logos painted on the football fields at various schools. I mean, it's everywhere.
Buildings, right, have naming rights stuff. We saw about, I think, at UNLV.
Arizona's stadium
is named after. Yeah. I think that's right. Yeah. And so, it is an epidemic and it's just so easy to do. In Sorsby's, at least if the details are true about placing like tens of thousands of individual small bets, maybe 20, 30 a day, that's a real problem, right? That's kind of a cry.
It's looking for the dopamine hit that,
yeah.
And look, I got two teenagers. And I see it with their friends and with that age group. And some of them, you cannot get off their phones. I have had my kids come and say, hey, so-and-so will not stop looking at their phone. We don't know what to do to make them talk to us. And
delete the app. Delete the app.
Yeah, and it's not... So
just
there's all, it's all kind of tied together. The thing about the gambling, though, there's a bright line, and there's always been a bright line of you can't gamble on the sport you play, and more specifically, you can't gamble on the team you're on. And according to all the reporting on Brennan Sorsby, there are bets on Indiana when he was redshirting there, and not on any game he actually played in, but you know, everybody knows where that, you know, that line is going to be enforced pretty strictly.
Yeah.
So that it's, well, that's what makes me curious about what happens next.
Well, you look at, let's talk about that, right? There is probably a multiple step process here. Well, first of all, I think for the NCAA to conclude its investigation, it probably needs to talk to Brennan Sorsby or hear from him in some way. And now that he's in treatment, and you know, this is all new, right? Texas Tech only found out about a week and a half ago. So he went to treatment, and so until he gets out of treatment, probably not talking to the NCAA. Now I'm been told that he's going to end up at least sending the NCAA something, like acknowledging all this, just like he did to Texas
Tech.
He's, like,
he's
coming
got some
clean,
pretty good lawyers, you know? Too. Scott Thompson, yeah. who worked with Bill Self in his case involving the NCAA, and also Jeffrey Kessler, which I'm not sure what antitrust situation would be here, but maybe it's just
you never know.
Yeah,
Kessler has a good enough record. You just kind of throw him into the group, I guess. You know,
yeah.
But so after the NCAA talks to Sorsby, then you know it'll conclude its investigation. It'll probably recommend. I'm sure it'll recommend that Texas Tech ban him. And Texas Tech is supposed to, according to NCAA rules, ban its own player from playing again, and then can request a reinstatement of that player. But you know, the end of the road here probably is one of two things, because the NCAA is probably unlikely to reinstate him, and that's a lawsuit, right? So that's court, yeah. Or the supplemental NFL draft in June.
Yeah,
this right? Feels so much,
which is essentially a silent auction for a football player.
Yeah.
So this is a very American problem. This feels incredibly similar to how we used to treat drug addiction in the 1970s and 80s. I have a really hard time talking about banning a player or suspending him for a year when we are going to then turn around and throw it to hey, it's the national title game, guys. Let's throw it over to ESPN Bet to talk about the endgame parlay. We on this show are asked by our producers to pick a game every week against the spread. I'm just not going to participate in this idea that he is somehow committed a sin. We are propagating this. We are selling this to consumers. We are pushing this nonstop at every second with very little regulation. You'd be shocked at how easy it is for people under 18 to get on a sportsbook app. I can't do this. I hope he gets better. Andy, you touched on the concept of like the dopaminergic. That's a very hard word to say. Dopaminergic process. One of the things that scientists think, behavioral scientists believe, is that kids who grew up unmonitored on phones are now showing a higher propensity to this because these guys right here, these smartphones, are designed with that same dopaminergic casino-like mentality by software developers. And so it's so easy to bridge kids. And I say kids, dude, I'm 45. Like, how old is Brennan Sorsby? 24? Like
he's 20.
He had a
younger 22. Than that, huh?
He's 22.
Okay. So he's had a completely different experience digitally than we have in our lives in America. And we haven't done anything to protect kids from this. If anything, we've encouraged it. And this is where I want to say one more time, to be totally transparent, about 5 or 6 years ago, ad revenue from sports books who were allowed to emerge nationally, not just in Nevada, basically propped up sports media for the better part of 4 years, to take you behind the curtain. The amount of money that came in from books, from sports books, from gambling, from casinos specifically, helped float a lot of companies for a long time. So I have a hard time castigating this young man. It was probably beyond his control after a certain point.
Well,
I would encourage anybody.
I have a hard time castigating him for an addiction for this.
Yeah.
But the rule on don't bet on your own team has always been very clear. I was a walk-on football player 30 years ago, and behind every door was a sign from the NCAA that said, don't bet on it. Like, it's not like you're not told. Don't do, like, because you can get, there are things you can bet on as a player.
Yeah.
And
why is that? Why are you not allowed to bet on it? Because of the integrity of the game, right?
Because the entire business shuts down if everybody thinks the games are fixed. And I'm not talking about the gambling part of the business. I'm talking about the business part of the business.
Yeah. Don't take the ad revenue. Don't take the NFL, the NCAA, but they're going to take the SEC.
And they're going to have this rule. So you can moralize all you want about it. There's always going to be a rule. Don't bet on your own team.
Yeah, that's fine.
And they're going to continually deregulate vice stuff because that's how societies tend to move.
Why can't you bet for your team?
Pete Rose would love to know that. The ghost of Pete Rose would love to know that.
I think he did bet for his team, right? Yeah. Wasn't that
the joke? The joke on the internet was he bet on Indiana before it was cool.
Yeah, I met him at a wrestling under, event. Yeah. And,
yeah. Right. Yeah,
I met him at a wrestling event in a phase of his life where he was willing to talk to literally anyone about his gambling suspensions. And he would often point out that it wasn't like he was fading the Reds. He was often betting on the Reds. I have no problem with that. By the way, I know of at least three assistant coaches that I've spoken to in the last 5 years who also bet. Like it's everywhere. You don't know it. And you're not going to
see
a segment
of this.
You're not going to see it on SportsCenter. I'm telling you right now. Our industry doesn't want to talk about this, and I'm fascinated to see how they talk about this.
Do we not want to talk? Like everybody's talked about this since it happened yesterday.
The biggest program in college football is ESPN Game Day that has a betting component to it.
They don't have an episode until August, but
I know. But I'm but they're gonna have to talk about Texas Tech and when probably not when or if, but more when he's not on the field, and this is why I would strongly advise, not that they ever listen to me or anyone like me, that they not moralize on the create a straw man or a scarecrow out of Brendan Sorensen.
Dan Orlovsky put a like facepalm emoji up when the news broke yesterday and got buried for it. Buried.
ESPN has a whole network for this. A whole network.
Look, I did too. Like I posted clips from my On3 show. There is a BetMGM logo in the corner on the lower third. And everybody's like, don't you think it's a little obtuse to have this? I'm like, no, we talked about it. At the open of the show, because you can't avoid it.
Yeah. And I don't think it's going away. And I think we're going to see more of this. But did we need this, something like this, a high profile like this to happen to maybe for a lot of athletes to avoid this? Did we need some kind of public thing like this? I don't know.
Or
I mean,
did
maybe
to come back to what you were originally talking
kind
about,
of impact.
Ross. Did the personnel departments of college football need a warning, a lesson that you better do your background checks before you start signing these very large checks?
A $5 million investment. Yeah.
I refuse to believe that Texas Tech didn't have some awareness of this. That's where, like, Andy, you're talking about moralizing and all that. Like,
Godfrey,
I'm not letting them off the hook.
If they knew that he had bet on his own team, I can guarantee you that 100% of schools would stay away from someone if they knew
Cincinnati
in the past.
It looks like it based on reporting from USA Today, of which I did not participate in. I am simply just reading off the story. Mm-hmm. It looks like Cincinnati knew.
But if they knew because he was already there and they found out when he was already there, wouldn't they be incentivized to not talk about that and not mention it until, oh, I don't know. He left for Texas Tech and didn't pay the buyout.
Didn't pay the buyout, right? Yeah, they would be incentivized to do that. The NCAA evidence, of course, that they sort of covered it up, then there'll probably be some penalties there on Cincinnati, but it won't impact
if this kid's
them,
banned, if this kid's banned and Cincinnati knew that he was doing it, Cincinnati should face some sort of punishment.
Oh, you mean Cincinnati might have to fire the coach that it probably wants to fire anyway, except now it can do it for free?
Good point.
Maybe.
Listen, there's always an angle. Now, the on-field part of this is very interesting as well, because we played a little game on my other show last year of who's comfortable putting their backup quarterback in the game. It was a really short list going into last season. We didn't know about Trinidad Chambliss. But we've started to play it earlier now, and this forces us into that. And it's interesting with Texas Tech because they actually do have a backup quarterback named Will Hammond, who
that they put in to win a game.
won the Utah game for them.
Yeah, I was
and
there,
then tore his ACL because he was replacing Baron Morton, who was out for a while.
Right.
And so Will Hammond is not completely recovered. He is taking steps back in his rehab. He may or may not be ready week one. They have a transfer from Tulsa who probably will wind up playing early if Will Hammond's not ready. But Texas Tech actually is one of the few that I would probably say, if they had to put the backup in and he had to roll for most of the season, they'd be cool with that. They had Will Hammond on a multi-year deal on purpose in case they went out and got a portal quarterback, they wouldn't lose him. And it may prove to be a wise move. Now, here's the crazy thing, because everybody's like, oh, you know, I bet they don't have to pay him the money. I am imagining, haven't seen Brendan Sorsby's contract. I imagine if something happens that gets him banned, they don't have to pay him any more money.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I would think so.
In the current system, you can't go get another quarterback now. That's right. What makes this
the ghost transfer.
You get a ghost.
Are we gonna see somebody
who's maybe, ghosting?
Maybe they take the risk, go get a quarterback.
I don't think in this case, because I think they're confident enough in Will Hammond. That they're okay. But this is one where if it had been maybe a different school and their starter suddenly couldn't play, and they found out whether it was injury, NCAA investigation, whatever. There are a few schools that I think would take the risk. I don't think Texas Tech won them.
And then just sue, right? Then your coach gets suspended a half season because you took a transfer. You would just sue. You would just take the penalty.
Yeah, you're probably going to win.
And say, we don't need our coach for the first six games. I don't know.
Jim Harbaugh didn't coach six games and won a national championship. Yeah, so
it's true.
Now,
that's true.
I do think this is going to change the vetting process for some of these guys, because you cannot have this happen. You just can't. Like, if you're the personnel people, this is on you.
I would suggest, and this has been going on in Hollywood since the 1940s, that if you're going to invest millions of dollars in one person, that you maybe keep on retainer a group or a consulting firm that is able to fully pick apart these individuals for potential problems.
Yes.
It's not that. Mm-hmm. Look, Hollywood studios do it. The NFL does it.
The NBA does it.
Exactly. Television networks do it for like potential news anchors to see if there's like... We're going to have to see this happen now, because as pro-employment as I am at the collegiate level, there are responsibilities that come with employment that are different than being a student athlete. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a problem with that. I think this particular affliction, ailment, addiction, whatever you want to call it, was probably hushed away by everyone along the way because no one wanted to be the institution that dealt with this until.
Right. It's not a problem.
I want to find out why he entered now, and were we on the precipice of discovery from someone else? Yeah,
that's a good question, is why it happened now, because the folks that I spoke to have said that he hasn't bet while in Lubbock, certainly not on college. So if he has stopped...
There have been no college football games since he got there.
Why? Yeah, then with no football, I was thinking basketball too.
Yeah.
But like... Why do they enter him in treatment now? And I think, and I just posted a story kind of about on Yahoo Sports about the just an analysis of all this. And I think one of the things is probably, probably getting the NCAA's attention that this is taking seriously. This has been taken seriously, and maybe having a sympathetic ruling of some sort.
Well, and I
don't know.
I'll look at it from their perspective too, because Brendan Sorsby has multiple things to worry about here. It's not just, can he play for Texas Tech this year? There's a big problem, even if he's not allowed to play for Texas Tech, in that NFL teams are going to have a serious issue with you gambling on your own team as well. Like, that is going to be a disqualifying factor for a lot of teams. And so, him going to treatment, some of that may also be a signal to NFL teams, hey, he'll be better, so please, by all means, consider drafting him.
Do you think if the Sackler family wanted to give $10 million to like an NIL, that someone would take it? I do. Like
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, yep. Like we're I just can't get over how college football this like the situation is. Like we've pumped this out. Now the labor force is infected with it, and we're gonna punish the labor force. It's freaking crazy. It's sad. I really do think that the Sackler family could probably fund an NIL right now.
But again, you can gamble. Just a couple things you can't gamble on, and
well, you really can't gamble that. Either, Andy. You can't. The NCAA. Remember, the NCAA reversed.
Right.
The decision last year to allow pro sports gambling even.
Yeah, but you can still do paramutuals. I think you can do combat sports. Like it's there are avenues. If you gotta like scratch the itch. So
no, ask Rick Neuheisel about it.
Yeah.
That reference may be too old, actually. That reference may be too old.
No, he was doing it in tournament the pools.
Yeah. It was the most like ridiculous. The most innocuous, like benign form of like I have an NCAA tournament pool with my 9 and 12 year old. Like, yeah, he did that level of gambling and got popped for it. So
So what is the appropriate penalty here? Like, Godfrey, if you don't think the full ban on betting on your own school is appropriate, like what do you think it should be?
I want to know the specifics because we are talking about this is what I would do. We're talking about thousands, right, of bets. So we have to come through those thousands. We need to figure out if any of those bets were made that could be considered insider by the actual practical terms, not by the industry's terms, not by the house's terms. I'm talking about like the books themselves are going to say, well,
like what
he had an advantage because he was on the roster.
Was doing where he was alerting his buddies that he was going to take himself out of the game, bet my unders.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Or the Alabama baseball coach that did this. Do you guys remember that one?
Yes.
Right. So
dumbest.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Dumbest.
Okay.
That was bad.
At this current moment, what this looks like to me is a gambling addict because of the frequency and it's the volume of bets and the dollar amount of most of the bets that I've read about is that he was addicted to that dopaminergic process that we talked about, Andy. If that is the case and we cannot find any like money making scheme here by Brendan Sorsby, which I something tells me we're not going to. I could be wrong. Then I think he needs to go into treatment. I don't think it should affect his livelihood ultimately. I don't have a problem with him playing. I really don't. I've seen so much worse stuff happen in college football that has gone unnoticed and unpunished by the NCAA, namely stuff like sexual assault. So, I mean, like, I don't really have a problem with this.
Well, one of the other things that somebody brought up to me, too, was think about all the eligibility cases where players are given an extra year for, you know, you might say, absurd reasons by local judges or whatnot, and the fact that through a court they're going to get, you know, in a fifth year, sixth year, seventh year, and somebody who made a couple of bets, you know, on his own team 4 years ago that he in games he didn't play in will lose a whole season of eligibility in potentially $4 to $5 million also in compensation, and that's why. If the NCAA does not issue some kind of reinstatement, I'm guessing he'll sue. I'm guessing it'll be in the it'll be in local Lubbock court, and you know, just like a lot of these cases in the eligibility cases, I would think that Brennan Sorsby there'll be an injunction, and Brennan Sorsby will play again if he wants to. If not, then maybe he goes to supplemental draft.
I'm not sure a judge, even a local judge, is going to do that.
But that's really sad. I mean, the ideal outcome here
because
is that
the
he
line
doesn't
is pretty
again.
Bright on don't bet on your own team. And if that's
fine,
that's where they're going on that. That's if it were not that, if you take that out, I think there'd be a really good chance. But
I think the best solution here is that we get every single athlete to sign a document that says they will not gamble in any structured way possible at all. And then that we stop taking money from these outlets and we don't have to have this relationship.
It's not gonna happen.
Period. I mean, well, that's cool. But you also have a U.S. Special Forces operative who made $400,000 in the Maduro raid. This is bigger than sports. This is a major problem. And we keep shrugging and we keep taking the money.
Yeah.
And the problem gets bigger.
Well, the futures market on non-sports is so much messier than anything But that is a
it's completely
different.
It is a word that our producer doesn't like it when I use it, because then he has to do an edit. Yeah, it's deeply so.
Yes. Yeah. All right. When we come back, the five to play five. The march continues. There's a key development. Plus, they're trying to slip some stuff in there, and it's pretty funny. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back, College Football Inquirer, and a little news from the NCAA's Division I board. I always get this mixed up, Ross, the board, the council, the cabinet. But this was the board making a recommendation to the cabinet. And 5 years to play five continues unabated. It looks like it's going to get approved next month. But the key piece of news was about when the effective date will be and who it affects. So can you explain, if they go five to play five, if they say, yes, you have 5 years to play five, no more red shirts, very few waivers, when will that go into effect and who will and will not be able to take advantage of that?
Well, we don't know the first answer yet. It'll either go into effect August, this coming August, right, for this coming academic year, or actually next August. I think the board will continue to discuss that. They're trying to get it to go into effect immediately this August, but the NCAA and its many members, as we know, work very slowly. But one thing the board did do, to the surprise of many, actually, because the board, again, usually works very slowly, but in their first board meeting over this topic, they issued a sort of a decision or directive to the cabinet, as you mentioned, Andy, that the current senior class that just completed or are completing their senior year will not get an additional like fifth season of eligibility next year. So that was
they're going to get a check
a big
eventually.
Question mark.
That's what they're saying. But
yeah, there'll almost certainly be some kind of class action lawsuit against the senior cohort, saying that it should have gotten the fifth season of eligibility, and that the NCAA is costing it millions of dollars in quote NIL and rev share payments. So I'm sure we will see that at some point. I think people ask, well, why did the NCAA do this? Why didn't they just grant the fifth season to all these players to avoid lawsuits?
Because they're going to get lawsuits from somebody else if they do that.
Well, they're going to get lawsuits anyway. Yeah. And two, the issues that come with granting all these players a fifth season right now, you know, or even it probably wouldn't have happened now. It probably would have even happened when it gets adopted at earliest next month, is that a lot of them are already gone. People have been drafted in the NFL, the NBA, they're in the NBA draft. They've just left college completely. So there's that whole issue.
You would have to open
but there's
a new
also
transfer
the issue
portal
of creating
window.
A
yeah,
transfer
there's
portal.
A
yeah.
Lot.
And that's certainly something that the administrators didn't want to do, is just create sort of this new like transfer portal.
They're also going to
get
all
these
sued.
Players and the roster limits too is another issue. They'd have to give relief to all the roster limits because all these coaches were planning on not having these players. Mm-hmm. So it would just be too confusing. And so that's why they made the decision, whether you agree or not, that's what they decided to do.
Yeah. This is a rip the Band-Aid off situation. They know they're going to have to pay money. They know they're going to get sued. Everybody who played in the NIL era from 21 on is going to sue them because they didn't get that fifth year. And so they're going to have to accept that. That's where they're at. But it would streamline the process and everybody, you know, going forward would have 5 years. It would eliminate in football. It would eliminate my favorite ailment, game five-itis. So we would not have to be concerned about people shutting it down after four games anymore. In football, which is what every coach is on eggshells about every season. But
yeah,
we'll see what happens with that. I was tickled because they've sent out a release about that and they had more things in the release. And
they love to do that. Down in.
Yeah, they also are tackling tampering, boys. Now, there's one thing that makes a lot of sense. At the request of the Big Ten, the board adopted a narrow change to the rules so that if you have a player that has signed a rev share deal, and part of their rev share deal says this is a multi-year deal, and they do not, the school does not have to enter them in the transfer portal during the deal because they are under contract.
The Damon Williams rule.
The Damon Williams rule, essentially, yes. That makes sense because the player agreed to it. They signed the form.
Yeah.
They had an agent. Right. Like, they were represented. Like, everybody's kosher there. The next one's funnier. I will read it verbatim.
Yeah. Good luck understanding this.
The board also introduced a proposal that would direct the infractions process to presume violations occurred in cases of impermissible contact with transfer students, i.e. tampering. If the proposal is adopted by the Division I cabinet in June, schools suspected of tampering with student athletes prior to their entry into the transfer portal would need to demonstrate the violation did not occur to avoid penalties. Translation, you are guilty until proven innocent. When did you stop beating your wife?
Yeah. Presumption of guilt, as NCAA calls it. I wish sometimes they would write those things a little more clearly. I think I had to read that graph 5 times to understand.
Oh, I don't think they want to write that clearly, Ross, because
it's, yeah.
Yeah, no, there's a very clear reason why it's buried
intentional. Confusing and buried.
They're not looking for good syntax, I put it that way.
Which, this is weird, Andy, because right now the NCAA is in the middle of sort of tweet adjusting, you know, restructuring, whatever. It's a tampering policy and it's tampering penalties to make them a little more pro sports like, you might say.
Yeah.
Where there's a little more access to discussions with athletes. They're going to be a little more open to when athletes can discuss and negotiate with other schools. So this is a weird one because it's sort of like more strict than their current policy. I thought the working group was trying to make their policy a little more open and relaxed. So this is an interesting one, but maybe it'll be comboed with some other new
Can I tell you what's going to happen, structures. Ross? If they pass it. Now, they don't have to pass it, but I can already tell you what's going to happen.
Lawsuits?
Yeah, they're going to try to suspend some coaches because basically every coach who gets accused of tampering will then turn around and accuse his accuser of tampering because every coach who doesn't work at a service academy, because service academies can't take transfers, but every coach who doesn't work at a service academy is tampering. So they can't.
If there was a war, if we bring back the draft. No, I'm not kidding. If we bring back the draft, then everybody can transfer.
There you go.
Just throwing that out there. I've read a lot of Army Navy history. I was like, you know, if we go to a ground war against China or Iran, then guess what? Army is my number one pick for the national title.
So here's the thing. We know what's going to happen because this happened 3 years ago. This happened 3 years ago with the NIL rules regarding using NIL as a recruiting inducement. They were trying to tamp down on this nefarious practice of,
boy, they got rid of that, didn't they?
So their brilliant solution was presume guilt. Well, you'll never guess what happened in Tennessee, where they had a quarterback named Nico Iamaleava who had a very high-profile NIL deal. Tennessee was getting investigated over this because, of course, the NIL deal was a recruiting inducement. And the University of Tennessee went to Jonathan Scrimeti, the attorney general in Tennessee, said, hey, can you help us here? He forged a coalition with the AGs in Virginia, New York, Florida, and D.C. They sued the NCAA, and the result was those rules were blown off the face of the earth. Like, happen here, except it will be when you try to suspend Lane Kiffin and Louisiana's attorney general shows up.
I'm really starting to understand the American dislike of the media. Okay, because this is just the same as politics right now. The NCAA is the same as our president. And I'm not making this political, but here's what we're doing. The NCAA comes out with some announcement of some asinine plan that will never make it.
Mm-hmm.
We credulously report it.
Godfrey, no. I'm not, this is not me credulously parroting what they said.
We're giving it oxygen.
Because they did it already. If they had done this already,
we're in the pro.
Yeah.
Let me finish.
Okay.
NCAA makes an announcement Okay, we're going to shave everybody's head. It's mandatory now. And then we're going to brand you on the forehead with our logo or some dumbass thing. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Sometimes it's hard not to swear in the show. And then we are like, oh my God, breaking news. And then as we get into the news analysis of this, we're like, yeah, this is never going to happen. It's going to die in court.
No, but it happened. They already took them. Like, they took them to court right. over it. It's going to happen.
And then we're going
to
go to court.
Because they're,
yeah.
And then we're going to go to court.
Addicted to banging their heads against the same yes. concrete wall.
This is what I'm getting at. Then we go to court. Then the thing doesn't happen. Then sanity prevails. And just like Nico Imaliava or Chambliss or any of these situations, the thing that we knew was going to happen post-Alston happens.
But you have to keep promoting sanity, because the one time sanity doesn't prevail, that's when things go really perk-wacky.
No, here's what we need to do. We need to burn down the NCAA. And now the power, like,
well, yeah,
what I'm exhausted by, like, as someone who's charged with news analysis on this show, I'm like, this thing happened. This thing's not going to happen. We're going to talk about how they introduced it. Then it's ultimately like going to get challenged in court, and the NCAA is going to continue to just give up an inch and give up an inch and give up an inch. Now, I will say this. I'm tired of blaming the NCAA, because the NCAA is its membership.
Yes.
And the
yes.
membership itself
yeah, no, this is the
could stop this,
is this not
tomorrow.
The NCAA. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, yes, absolutely. And in like
this is where I just get exhausted. I'm like, I don't know what to say anymore.
You know, this tampering stuff is, there's a group of power conference like committee. It's all power conference administrators, right?
Yeah.
That have made this rule. I mean, look at the ghost transfer stuff we talked about when that passed. How is that going to stand up legally if somebody challenges it? I mean, that passed because it was a committee of school administrators. So it's all the schools creating the rules that a lot of them end up breaking and then challenging in
right.
court.
And that's what makes the tampering thing so stupid. Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, I credit him for going, hey, maybe just pause on this until you can actually rewrite rules that reflect the current landscape. And the other commissioners are like, no, go for it. Get them.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's the same reason.
Guys, your coaches are all doing this. What are you doing?
Because a politician wants to look tough on crime. And conference commissioners and school presidents and athletic directors want to wag their finger and talk about tampering. They want to talk about how horrible it is. But they damn sure don't want to be overseeing a football program that loses
five, six, seven
games a year.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not even me. It's just, we're going to say one thing publicly, and then we're going to do the exact opposite privately. And by dividing us and them with the schools and the NCAA, I think it's incumbent upon us, if we're going to keep doing these segments and they're going to keep doing this, we're all going to participate in this carousel. I'm going to try my best every time to say, hey, the people
enacting these
stupid-ass policies.
Usually because the schools are the NCAA. Yes.
The people suggesting these stupid-ass policies are not the NCAA. It's the membership. It's the same people breaking those stupid-ass policies.
Right. Yep. And they're fine with the policies being enforced until they are enforced upon them.
Then they go to court.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then they blow it all up. But that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, my guess is this won't pass because it's incredibly stupid. We've already seen it. But if you don't point out the little thing buried in the press release, sometimes it happens. Then the real fun begins.
Oh, God.
When we come back, the NFL draft numbers are in. Actual hard data, if you want to have your conference superiority argument, if you want to argue about your team schedule being a grind.
Andy teased a exciting close game that I got excited about this weekend, and I watched a blowout.
Yeah, that's my fault. We'll talk about it when we come back. Welcome back to the College Football Inquirer. The draft numbers are in, and boy, did I screw up the tease on Thursday's show, as Godfrey pointed out. I said, is this the year that the SEC's streak of having the most players drafted gets broken? That streak started in 2005, by the way. No, it wasn't even close. Last year, the SEC only had 7 more draft picks than the Big Ten, and I thought, okay, this is the window closing. This
the
is
gap
the,
is closing.
The
yes.
gap is closing. Yeah. Oh, no, no, no. The SEC set a record with 87 players drafted. The Big Ten, which has two more schools in the SEC, mind you, had 68. Way back, tied at 38, are the ACC and the Big 12. Guys, there is a function to this, and I don't know how you guys feel about it. Let me ask you. My feeling on the NFL draft numbers is these are the most impartial people we can find to judge how talented the conferences are, because their jobs rely on them selecting the best players, not on any sort of sentimental factors. So I always look at these numbers and take them seriously. And so like when I hear an SEC coach say top to bottom, our schedule is a tougher grind than another league, I would say this helps their argument. And with the Big Ten, I think you can look at a couple of things. For example, the number of schools with six or more players drafted. I think the SEC had 9, the Big Ten had 8. So the Big Ten and the SEC, very similar at the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the number of SEC schools that had 3 or more players drafted was 13. And in the Big Ten, that number was 9. And so what this tells me is, I don't know that the bottom of the Big Ten quite cares as much as the bottom of the SEC yet. I think it's coming, but I don't think it's there yet.
So your colleague, Steve Wiltfong, kind of smartened me up on this when I was working on a piece, like I think 2 years ago now, Andy. Mm-hmm. I think they care. I think that it's a lot like building a new stadium, right? So I live in Nashville, and periodically I drive by, and that Titan Stadium is, I think it's due to open in 27 or maybe 8 or something. It takes a long time. That's the metaphor I'm trying to reach for here. I think they care. I just think that if you look at the NIL and portal as a kind of a big bang moment for a lot of Big Ten institutions that didn't know how or didn't want to participate in the old religion,
right?
Then I think it takes 5, 6, 7 years. Indiana, God bless them, I love them.
Accelerated, yeah.
Kind of a little bit of an outlier here as a case study. So I just want to shout out Indiana real fast, because one of the things that I think we're also missing here is the translation of recruiting evaluation of high school players and their eventual trajectory to NFL talent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to soapbox about how many people are whining about NIL in the NFL right now, but real fast, Fernando Mendoza, these are all people who got drafted from Indiana this weekend. Fernando Mendoza, 2-star. Omar Cooper, 4-star. D'Angelo Pons, 3-star. Kalyan Black, 3-star. Elijah Surratt,
0 stars. St. Francis of Pennsylvania is where he started.
Riley Nowakowski, 0 stars. Our buddy Pat Coogan, 3 stars. He was considered.
Which,
I guess he's a blue chip.
Signed with Notre Dame, which is like, yeah, yes, that's saying something.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which may have been the reason for his stars. Aiden Fisher, 0 stars. These people got drafted by Indiana. So there is a dissonance right now in a lot of different levels of football. It's funny because I think like 2 weeks ago I was on the show talking about how from a schematic philosophy, we've never been more integrated, and I've never seen in my career this much positive communication going all the way from high school to the NFL and back, including all levels of college in terms of like scheme, philosophy, and mm-hmm. player development. But we are kind of wonky as it goes with the player side of this, right? I promise, Andy, I'm not going to scream about all the NFL dorks that are whining.
You can. I went on Ross Tucker's podcast and did it too. Go for it.
Was it? It's Andrew Brandt that made the rounds, Packers, right? It was the Andrew. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wiped out, I think, is the words he used.
Wiped out. That last year, round 6 and 7 were wiped out. Oh my gosh, Andy. I really, you know, clearly the NFL's investment in college football is not pay. Oh, wait, it's a completely free development league. Yeah, Shut up.
They don't invest at all. But and also, look, now the 5 for 5 thing is going to change the math on it a little bit. But eventually, this will all work itself out, because as far as we know, there is not going to be a change that allows people to just stay indefinitely in college. So the players in the college will eventually have to work their way out of the system. The draft talent quality will normalize over the next few years. You just have a little disruption here. And NFL people don't
after have disruptions. This weekend and listening to like serious XM NFL draft coverage and watching the pundits on day three on the various TV shows, I've completely changed my mind. Here's what I want. I want 34-year-old linebackers in college. I want guys who I want guys just to piss the NFL off. I want guys who'd be like, that would be our, you know what? That guy should come out. He would be a fifth rounder and we would pay him X and he might get a second contract at X. And I'm like, you know what? Screw it. Stay at SMU and make a million more a year until you're my age. I want your kids on the sideline. I'll buy you a Pacifica.
What they're really mad about is they have to just change all their actuarial tables because now they have 24-year-old rookies. And I'm just like, guys, you brag about the average lifespan of a player or the average career of a player lasting 2.5 years. Why do you care if he's 24 or 22?
I'll tell you why. It's because it's a highly violent sport and they are seriously in their feels about certain position groups showing up with, they use this phrase, which I feel like you shouldn't say this out loud.
Tread
they're
on
like,
the tires.
Tread on the tires, man. Tread on the tires. And I'm like, so you're saying you're like, good. You're killing a human being at like an accelerated pace here with the job you're asking them to do. Like we are guys, we really, somebody needs a publicist here.
Well, I also think we've existed long enough in this world and understand the physics of football enough to know that running backs know their diminishing assets. Like they understand it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we did stories years ago about guys who were good running backs moving to linebacker because they could have longer, like in high school, because they could have longer NFL careers. So
yeah,
it's not like the running backs don't understand what's going on. They know.
Unless you're the Arizona Cardinals, and then it's definitely worth a third.
Hey, Jeremiah Love's really good. Really.
He's awesome. But damn. Yeah, like you paid premium.
Yeah, luxury item. You really need to have a good line before you. That's why Jahmyr Gibbs was a good pick in the first round.
That was a room. Yeah, that's a room service cheeseburger, my guy. You just paid $55 for that.
Can I throw one other? Well, couple other draft related numbers. SEC coaches who got fired. The five SEC coaches who were fired. Billy Napier, 7 draft picks at Florida. Brian Kelly, 7 draft picks at LSU. Hugh Freeze, 5 draft picks at Auburn. Sam Pittman, 4 at Arkansas. Mark Stoops, 4 at Kentucky.
Andy.
Fired.
Are you really crediting Brian Kelly? Like,
I'm not crediting them. I'm just saying.
No. It actually makes them look worse.
Yes.
The quarterback who almost
losing games were the more talented teams.
My On3 co-host, Ari Wasserman, asked me this question. He goes, does the SEC, do the numbers here indicate that the SEC has a coaching problem? And I said, the SEC has already answered that in the affirmative by firing 5 coaches that combined for 27 draft picks.
Yeah, but
I'm bad at math.
You know, NC State exists, boys. Sometimes you are a reliable professional football factory at 8 wins a year, and you
Let me give you two really strange. Yeah. This is at this point in the show, we're with the diehards. We're with our people.
Yeah.
So we know that Clemson had 9 draft picks, which was the same as Miami, atop the ACC. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it makes the whole record at Clemson look even worse. Do you guys know who had the 3rd most draft picks in the ACC? Which team?
The third.
I thought I just saw a list.
It's not
cheating,
Boston College.
Hell yeah!
Wow.
Boston College was the worst team in the ACC by a mile. 4 draft picks.
4, yeah. Same as Arkansas, same as Kentucky. Yeah. Did we go through the schools? Ohio State led with 11.
Ohio State led with
Texas
11.
Texas A&M and Alabama.
It's more fun to do how many people had as many as Clemson. You ready? So Clemson had 9. So I'm going to give you all the people who had 9 or more. Texas A&M had 10. Alabama had 10. Those were both college football playoff teams. Ohio State had 11, college football playoff team. Miami had 9. They played for the national championship. Texas Tech had 9. They won their conference and made the college football playoff. Clemson had 9.
Well, below them, too, Indiana had 8. Obviously won it all. But tied with Penn State. Penn State
Which
and Clemson, the outliers. The outliers in the top. what, top seven of teams with the most draft picks for sure.
Yeah, it's such a strange. By the way, Notre Dame only six, including two first round running backs. You know what that tells me? Irish are freaking loaded next year.
Yeah.
That I'm trying to do Service Academy news here, but I feel like I keep bringing him up today. Eli Heidenreich, remember you highlighted him last Tuesday, got drafted seventh round, I believe, by the Steelers.
It was such a scene. He's in his dress uniform. He comes out on stage. He's just got picked by the Steelers. It's all Steelers fans waving terrible towels. It was beautiful.
Really interesting follow-up. You talk about like a long lead development on a news story. Back in 2022, there was a change in the National Defense Authorization Act that basically tried to close the loophole, allowing for, and like, let's be honest, it doesn't happen that often.
It's why Belichick drafted Navy's long snapper in the fifth round that year when he was with the Patriots.
Yes. Mm. Keenan Reynolds was probably the other like probably high profile example I could think of. But basically the NDAA was trying to close the loophole, basically saying that cadets could not obtain employment in any particular way or any professional status, including athletes, until the commissioned service obligation, which basically means if you go to a service academy, you're going to go serve.
Yeah.
You're going to go serve for X amount of years, depending on what your specialty is.
Roger Staubach had to do that, and David Robinson had to do that.
So since the 2022 change, they've pushed back. They've tried to fight this. This went through multiple administrations, but it wasn't political necessarily. It was just kind of an administrative thing. But Heidenreich getting actually drafted. We're not talking about an undrafted free agent. We're talking about actually getting drafted by the Steelers. That's huge for the service academies. It's massive.
Well, I think they realize why they changed this is they realize it's good for the academies. If they can put players in pro sports, it makes people want to go to the academies and
it's
still
great.
Going to be the vast majority of players who go to the academies go directly into active duty.
Yes, absolutely. We're talking about not even 1%. We're talking about something far less than that. So,
Did we talk about the, I don't know if we spoke about the sort of the gaps. We always talk about the gaps with NIL and the portal, and man, you really see it in the draft. Just looking at numbers from the top, the first four rounds, the first 2 days of the draft, I think 2/3 of the draft picks were from the SEC and Big Ten.
Yeah.
And over 90% of players picked in the first four rounds were from the power conferences.
Yeah. And so it's David Hale broke down the numbers of who benefited the most from people transferring into their league. And the SEC by far, +33. So what that means is 33 guys who ended up on SEC schools that started out somewhere else. And the Big Ten and Big 12 were tied, I believe, with +12 or +13. And then the ACC was neutral, which is interesting because it means the ACC is getting
like
picked
zero?
Off a lot more than the Big 12. They were like they net zero, no net gain or loss. And which means they're probably getting picked off at a much higher rate than say the Big 12.
Right.
And then shout out.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Andy, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the group of five, I believe, was a -23.
Mm-hmm. So shout out to your Toledo Rockets, America, because they continue to develop high-end NFL talent. I'm talking about second-round pick, safety Emmanuel McNeil Warren, second round. Do you guys remember the last Toledo defensive player? It wasn't that long ago.
It was first
round pick. It was in 2024 when Quinyon Mitchell was drafted in the first round, and Nick Saban, on a live microphone, admitted to tampering to try and get him in the portal.
Yes. The Williston, Florida Red Devils. Shout-out Quinyon Mitchell. Shout-out Jason Candle, who's going to be doing that at Connecticut now. Because he was able to get guys out of high school, get them to come to Toledo, and stay at Toledo until they got drafted. Now he's at UConn.
By the way, if I'm a G5 coach, G6, whatever the hell we call it now, and I'm listening to this, I'm immediately changing all those graphics where if a kid starts with me and he plays for 2 or 3 years and then he goes to a power team and gets drafted, I'm still claiming that. I think we're still part of the development process. That's how you have to recruit.
Yeah,
well,
that's
when
true.
Jeff Choate got to Nevada, and he made it part of his recruiting pitch.
Yeah, Jamie Chadwell, I think, has done the same. You know, come here, we'll develop you. You can go be a million-dollar athlete up at the power
conference
Mack
level. Jerry Mack at Kennesaw State, we had him on the show the other day. And he's like, I get it. I get our place in the ecosystem, and we want these players to be successful. And if somebody is going to come pay you a bunch of money to go play in another conference, then it means we did our job.
That's what you got to do.
And that's probably how you have to do it to survive. That's because if you fight it, you're going to lose. But we'll see. I mean, Jason Candle's done a really good job of it, and he'll be trying to do it at UConn now instead of Toledo.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Boys, that was a very interesting show. The Brendan Sorsby thing has a lot of tentacles, and I think we'll probably end up talking about it quite a bit more throughout the offseason, because this may not be the only situation we have to deal with here. But it is going to be fascinating to see how that moves going forward. So I imagine we'll brush on that Thursday, and then Lord only knows what else is going to happen. So we'll talk to you then.